Welcome to the Muslim Philanthropy Podcast. My name is Muhi Khwaja from American Muslim Community Foundation. Welcome to the show, Sania Vashist. We have her on as an outstanding youth nominee. Congratulations on your nomination.
Thank you so much for you and your foundation for nominating me. I was delighted when, you know, I saw my name on the list as well as the other outstanding nominees for each category.
Of course. So, you know, tell us a little bit about Code Her. When you were 13, you were so ambitious and wanted to start an organization when most kids are out kind of making friends and doing other things. So tell us a little bit more about how you got started.
Yeah, of course. So ever since I was younger than I am now, I always kind of noticed that gender gap and, you know, gender inequality taking form in all aspects of my life, whether it was, you know, the boys didn't want me to play basketball or football with them, or, you know, in class, I would see the girls playing, you know, with dolls and the boys playing with Legos, and just these small little, you know, social issues that I kind of just saw in my school and then other, you know, events and, you know, organizations I was participating in. And so when it came the summer before high school, when, you know, everyone's kind of asking you, so like, what do you want to do? And, you know, what do you want to get involved in? I didn't really see anything at my public high school that piqued my interest. And so around that time, I was like, why not just start something of my own? And an issue that I've always been passionate about is gender equality and feminism as a whole. And around that time, you know, 2016, 2017, there was this big push of getting more women involved in tech, getting more women in leadership positions, C-suite roles, especially within the US. And I thought, let's start in middle school, you know, when these girls are kind of shaping their interest. And I remember in my middle school, there was no girls, you know, interested in computer science. I was the only girl in this after-school girls coding program. And I thought, you know, let me just start small and changing that within my local community. And so I started just by, you know, cold emailing a bunch of middle school teachers saying, hey, like, I want to run this program at your school, you know, teaching computer science. Can you help me? Can you, you know, dedicate an hour of your week to allow me to come to your school, run this program for girls in your class? I got like 500 responses. Most of them were being no, but I finally got one. And it actually turned out to be a male teacher that was really interested in getting women in his school and girls in his school involved in computer science and tech. And so, you know, one yes led to three more. And so I was running this program at four schools. It became a lot to handle for me alone. And I kind of saw the growth potential of our program and for Code Her to kind of grow. And so I recruited, you know, a great board of directors, executive team to kind of actually apply for the nonprofit status, expand across our region. So we were actually in every single middle school in the county, which was great. And then around that time, we sort of noticed that the dialogue of women in STEM and women in leadership, especially in the US, was really already propelled. And governments and organizations and corporations were talking about it. It wasn't unheard of for, you know, different people to be pushing that agenda. But then when you look across the globe, especially in developing countries, the global South, the conversation isn't even about girls in STEM, it's about girls in the workforce. Like, can you get these girls to go to college after high school and after marriage still be contributing members of the economy, still work? And so that's when I kind of noticed that, yes, the work we were doing in the US was important, but we weren't alone in that. And there were so many other nonprofits and, you know, different government initiatives that were really pushing towards that. And so our push for international outreach came actually like a 1.5 years in when we decided to best expand our efforts internationally.
Yeah, it's really phenomenal to just kind of hear your journey in such a short period of time. But it really all stems from that one person saying yes, agreeing to your idea, seeing the potential and opportunity. And it seems like along the way, you've iterated, you've taken into consideration how you could scale. And those are all things that, you know, startups and founders have all those discussions about. So it's really great to see that you've been able to implement that yourself as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing I always tell people is that it only takes one yes to get something to go.
For sure.
And so you can get like 50 no's. It doesn't matter. But you just need one person to say yes or one person to agree to help you. And oftentimes that all it takes to, you know, gain legitimacy, to get something up and running, and to kind of use that one yes to push your initiative idea forward.
Yeah, I think of even AMCF, you know, in that first year that we started offering donor advised funds, we had one family that started, and then it became four by the end of the year, and now we're at like 85. So we definitely have seen that growth in a few years, but there's so much more potential to scale. So we're excited about our own growth in the same manner. But I want to focus a little bit more on you as well. So, you know, you were accepted into Stanford University, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And you mentioned you're taking a gap year to kind of focus on your nonprofit a little bit more. So what are you hoping to accomplish over the next year?
Yeah, good question. That is something I'm also asking myself, as I have like this immense amount of free time on my hands that I've never had before. And throughout high school, I was, you know, full academic course load, extracurriculars, code her, like there was just so much to do. And I felt like I could never, you know, have that 100% of my time to just work on code her. And so, you know, when the pandemic hit, when I figured out that Stanford was going to be online for at least half a year, I thought, why not take this opportunity and dive, you know, full force into code her, expand our international outreach, especially during a time when it's extremely discouraging for minorities, for youth, for young women, especially in developing countries, when parents are pushing the idea of, why don't you just get married right now when, you know, there's this pandemic, you know, just don't worry about school, don't worry about getting a job, you know, things are so hard, just get married. Whereas girls could use this time to actually build their skills, to make sure that they're in a better place than they were before. And then when things are back to whatever the new normal looks like, they're more prepared to kind of enter the industries they're interested in, to push and break barriers. And so what we're working on, and I'm sure your organization has faced that challenge as well, is when everything is fully virtual, how do you, you know, even attempt to make that same impact that you had when operations and programs were on the ground? And especially when targeting disadvantaged communities in low-income countries, when tech access and access to internet is so rare and so limited, how do we make sure our outreach is really getting to the right population? And so we've launched virtual online conferences in, you know, women in leadership, women in tech, women in entrepreneurship and finance, to really emphasize, you know, women's empowerment. We're launching those programs and hopefully to gain partnerships with different NGOs and the Middle East, North Africa region, South Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, to, you know, implement our social entrepreneurship program that we had running on the ground in Morocco for 2 years.
Wonderful. And talk a little bit more about like what inspired you to work in Morocco.
Yeah, so I never really had the intention, you know, never really had Morocco in my mind before reaching out to a contact at American University and then kind of figuring out that she had connections in the region. But the Middle East and North Africa was always a region that I thought that if we were going to go international to really enter that space in particular, just because it has the lowest percentage of female labor force participation. And so whereas women are, you know, making up almost 50% of university populations, only 23% of the workforce. And so empowering Muslim women in the Middle East and North Africa was something that I was particularly interested in. And Morocco kind of started to be a good place for that just because of its location, it being an African country, but with Arab roots, its proximity to Europe. And we kind of saw that expansion going well within that region. And so again, it just takes one person to say yes. So I reached out to the professor and I was, you know, you have contacts in Morocco. Can you connect me to some schools there that, you know, we can build partnerships with, and then we can go, you know, during the summer to run our program. And she was able to connect me with these amazing teachers and schools in that region. First year, we ran our pilot program. So we were partnered with the U.S. Embassy's Access Program, where we were able to recruit low-income young women that also had English literacy. And so oftentimes, especially in that region, English is considered a language for the elite or the wealthy or those that can kind of afford to actually get that proficiency. And so with that partnership, we were able to recruit the girls. Second year, I applied for the public diplomacy grant from the U.S. State Department. So we received like $20,000 in funding for our program. So we went from 20 students in our program to almost like 500 within that year, which was amazing.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And so that was really awesome just to have the embassy support within that and to be really able to grow and push it. And, you know, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, we weren't able to run any in-person programs, but we're really trying to adjust and adapt, like I'm sure AMCF is during this time.
For sure. So it's really phenomenal. I'm glad that our listeners have an opportunity to learn more about Code Her and about yourself. You know, we've highlighted your organization in our Women's History Month initiative, and hopefully we'll continue to work closely with Code Her. It's so great to see all that you've done in such a short period of time, and you've got fans like AMCF and myself and so many others rooting you on. So congratulations again on the nomination.
Well, thank you so much. And I really appreciate your support and kind of to have the, you know, support of the American Muslim Community Foundation in the States while we do international outreach to impact, you know, Muslim communities abroad. And it really is, you know, kind of nice to have on the ground or at home, you know, the support from your organization while we do our international programs to kind of see the ways we're able to bridge those cultural divides and barriers.
Yeah, for sure. Is there anything that we weren't able to touch on that you wanted to mention as well?
No, I think we covered everything. Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed this discussion and excited for the virtual award ceremony and the guest speakers and the amazing panelists that you all have brought aboard.
Of course, we're looking forward to hosting as well. So thank you again.
Thank you so much.